Hey everyone, this is Jordan Van Trump, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of How I Built This Ag Business. Just wanted to let everyone know this podcast is sponsored by the company I started right out of college called AgSwag. I'm sure like many of the other disruptors on this podcast, I started this company searching for cooler stuff and better service. One of my first tasks when I got out of college was finding some cool hats for my dad's business, as my family and their friends always struggled to source quality swag throughout the years. I started this company only making a few hats, and have been fortunate enough to meet some of the top business leaders in the ag industry along the way. I've worked with some of the biggest disruptors currently in the space, such as FBN, Benson Hill, Pivot Bio, Pattern Ag, Holganics, as well as many veterans such as Cargill, Nutrien, Dairy Farmers of America, Kent Corp, CGB, Helena, and the list goes on and on. Throughout this journey of providing swag to various companies in agriculture, I've had the opportunity to learn some of the best business lessons, hacks, marketing strategies, and many other things to take my company to scale and become more successful throughout the years. My intentions of this series is to bring on guests that I've had the opportunity to work with over the years to tell their story and hopefully help you build your business in the future. Hope you enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of How I Built This Ag Business. We're on here today with Joe Sinclair, Hugh Sinclair, and Becca Sinclair. Joe started Quality Ag Service back in 1995, which is a full service ag retail with three locations in Iowa. They also have a feed store, a crop insurance business, and a wholesale chemical business that services independent retailers and cooperatives across the country. With that, I welcome you guys to the show.
Hey, thanks very much, Jordan, Kevin. Good to be here with you guys. I'm a big fan of the Van Trump family, and family companies are our favorite to work with. We'll work with everybody, but we love family companies the most, for sure.
Yeah, appreciate it, Joe. You guys have been awesome supporters through the years, and shoot, anything we can do to help you guys, we'd love to, and love to hear your story. I know you guys have built one heck of a family business up there, and that's what it's all about. And man, I know Joe sends me emails from time to time. We laugh at similar stories, and I think, you know, we're all kind of raised and brought up the same. And but I sure appreciate you coming on, Joe, and you and your family, and Hugh as well. So thank you guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So where did it all start for you guys in agriculture? You grew up on a farm, Joe, or sounds like
Yes, I did.
Maybe your dad started it and it really was kind of just slinging some stuff, and then you kind of turned into a real business. But I guess we'll start with how this story started.
It started on a integrated hog and sheep and corn farm in southern Iowa, and it migrated to hogs and cattle and corn in the late 70s. I was born in 1965, and in late 60s, about 70, 71, Dad started getting more into cattle and less into the sheep. And there's no groundwater here in this part of the world, so wells are unreliable. They fail often. So the Corps of Engineers in 1969 built a big reservoir on a tributary to the Missouri River and plumbed rural water past basically everybody's home now. And we hooked onto it in 1973 and moved from a real small house across the road to a quick as a wick. And we had in the family. And 1995, started Quality Ag and went full-time with it. Quit my job at Dow in 98, March of 98, and launched full-time Quality Ag. Bought a grain elevator and then a fertilizer plant. Tried to go broke, made every mistake that you can make. Tried to diversify, found out I wasn't any good at anything but agriculture. And really what it boils down to is we're successful because of the team that's here. And a big part of the team is our co-owner, Chris Knowles, who she'll be here in a little bit. She had an appointment this morning, but Chris owns part of this company, and we got a great team. Chris Knowles, Kevin Griffin, Joe Knowles. we got a core of people that make it happen. And that's how we built this business, is with a great team.
I was going to say, you guys started with the grain elevator, not in the input side.
Yeah. So when I when I, the place that we bought was called Baker's Grain and Feed, and I bought that in 1998 when we launched. Before that, we just had I started off with a half ton pickup pulling a spray coop with a 52 foot boom. And in between the spray coop and the pickup, there was a hay rack with a 1200 gallon water tank on it. And that's what I tended out of. That's how it started, was with a pickup and a hay rack and a sprayer that was a little train going down through the country. And then when we bought this grain elevator, I could tell you stories about owning a grain elevator. But one story I will tell is, there was one morning at 5 o'clock, still dark, and I'm up at the top changing out a pulley with a guy, and I can't at the top of the leg, and I can't get the leverage on it. So I got to jump outside the cage, and the guy that's with me goes, "Man, you're not tied off. You're going to fall." And I said, "No, I'm not going to fall. I'm not that lucky." And the trucks are lining up. We can just see them, you know, stacked up. We don't open until 7, and we're trying to get this work done before we open. And trucks are lined up coming in. And I told that guy, I said, "I wish a tornado would just take this elevator and put it on the courthouse lawn." And on June 22nd, 2015, the tornado hit, but it didn't make it all the way to the courthouse lawn. But it put that whole elevator on the ground. Everything, wow. Bins, grain everywhere, and we didn't rebuild it. So we're out of the grain business now, thank God, literally.
That was it. So what are you guys now? Just focus on the input side and the custom stuff and
agronomy. Yeah, we're an agronomy company. Agronomy inputs, fertilizers, chemicals. That's our wheelhouse.
Yeah. How big have you grown it?
We've got 4 retail stores in Iowa now, in Southern Iowa, Agency and Albia and Melrose. And then we've got the store that Hughes had up in Northern Iowa in Jessup. So that's our footprint on retail. And then in 1999, the local fertilizer plant that I'd been trying to buy came up for sale, and we bought it and filled it up with high priced fertilizer. And of course we had the Albia store full too. And long story made short, corn was only worth $1.80 and beans worth $3.60 locally. And nobody planted anything. The only people that made any money was the people that sold crop insurance. We sold more pearl millet seed than we did corn seed in 1999. So we decided we needed to diversify, put in the crop insurance agency, and tried to expand our geographic footprint so that the next time there was a locally wet year that we weren't impacted quite so negatively. So that was a positive development. And that was the year that Chris Knowles came on, and we'll get Chris on here pretty soon. You want to tell Chris to log in, make sure she got her invite. Yeah. We'll get Chris on here in a minute.
Cool. So was your dad always a farmer, or did he start farming, or what did he do?
So my dad is an amazing individual that was an unbelievable example for me and my 4 brothers and sisters. And he's really the guy that got it going. I mean, I grew up in a house with no running water, and then things got better. But my dad worked at every sale barn. He would buy, they call them cutting boars. You know, somebody round their pigs up. Back in those days, they weren't confinement pigs. And the guy'd bring all of his hogs to the sale barn, and the 80-pound boars would go for pennies on a dollar. And dad would bring them home. He was one of the first guys that had a gooseneck livestock trailer. Before he had a gooseneck, you know, he had the rack in the back of the pickup. And before the cutting boars got off the truck, he'd have them castrated and put them in with his pen full of hogs, and he'd get them healed up and sell them, and he'd make good money doing that. But he worked all those sale barns every day. And when they built the lake, he got a job down there with the Corps of Engineers running a crane, washing sand in the river. He worked all the time and made some really good decisions, bought some farms, sold some farms, and then got into restaurants. And he's just an amazing story. my dad. When he was 53 years old, 53, he was doing pretty good. And he mortgaged everything that he had for an idea that became Panera Bread.
So, really?
Yeah.
No shit. I had no idea that, Joe. Damn.
Yeah, really? he leveraged everything. The whole, everything. We had a little Thanksgiving dinner. He said, yeah, I got this idea. It's a bakery cafe. If we're wrong, we'll be broke again. But if we're right, it'll be all right. So it turned out all right.
Damn. I would guess. Hell, yeah. That's a hell of a different.
Oh, shit.
There's Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hello. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Good deal.
So you joined the business when, late 90s?
Yeah. I grew up in Central Iowa, but I moved down here in the early 90s and worked for a retail agronomy and grain elevator operation. And then in 1999, I came to work for Joe, the spring of 99, when they purchased the facility that they now be here.
Tell them about your first 6 months on the job, Chris, where you had to sort out all the paperwork from a non-qualified accounting staff.
Record keeping and admin is not Joe's strong suit, or getting work done is what they focused on. So the paperwork kind of just got literally probably put in a big shoebox and sorted out at a later date most of the time. And but they had a gal that was, she wasn't an accountant, she was a secretary, and she was working for him, and she decided it was too much for her, and so that's when I came aboard. But she trained me, quote, trained me for about a week before she left. And she would call Joe and tell her the checks that she wrote for the day, and then he would call the bank and tell them how much money they needed to advance on the line of credit. Or he would tell her not to pay this one or not to pay that one because they didn't have enough money on the line of credit. And the last day, if I wasn't already having second thoughts, her final parting words to me were, good luck to you. She's a very soft-spoken person. Good luck to you, and I hope that your paychecks don't bounce. So that was a ringing endorsement from my friend Neva. But it's been... it's drastically, the record keeping part has drastically improved since then. So we got on the right track and got things rolling.
Cool. Are you still on the record keeping side of things, or do you run like the crop insurance side of the business, or?
I'm a crop insurance agent, but we have another gal. Actually, she's my niece. She does most all the crop insurance. It got to be a big enough segment that we just assigned somebody to do that. I'm ahead of all the admin, do a lot of the procurement too of our inventory and stuff. So a little bit of everything. That's part of technically a small business. We get to wear lots of different hats.
Yeah. Sounds like mom, you get to do all the stuff that nobody wants to do.
Pretty much, yeah. You're familiar with that, yeah.
Spot on. My mom does.
Yeah.
We're like, nah, we're good there, mom. Yeah. You're in.
Chris is pretty exceptional. She deals with, as a CFO, with the bankers and the vendors and the credit departments mostly with vendors. I take care of most of the credit departments with our customers. Try to make sure that we get paid every time. It's important to get paid after you do the work and deliver the products. So Chris is really sharp on keeping everything in view. That's part of the CFO function.
She has patience.
Yeah.
But what?
I got a question for Joe. You guys keeping as much inventory on hand as you used to back in, 408 or 10 or 12 or?
We have to have inventory. You can sell out of an empty shed, but you can't deliver out of one. we had a strange dynamic in our industry in 2022. There were shortages and a lot of hoarding happened, and nobody knew that it was happening. Nobody had a really clear picture of just exactly how much inventory had been hoarded. And then fast forward to 2023, everybody overproduced, just like a farmer does whenever there's high prices. Everybody overproduced and prices crashed, and everybody in the ag chemical industry lost their shorts on their inventory. And now we're getting back to equilibrium. But you got to also remember that you made it on the run up, you lost it on the collapse. So you try to be as smart as you can and have an adequate level of inventory so that you can supply the customer. But there is risk in ownership for sure.
I remember back in the day, I'd go out and talk, and I mean, everybody'd have everything full, you know, just had massive inventories and everything. And then I don't know, it seemed like, I don't remember what year it was, but I would go to some ag retailers and I'm like, man, where's all the, you know, and they're like, shit. And they're like, we're just in the finance business now. You know, we're just shuffling things around, you know. And I think, you know, that gets a little crazy, but yeah, I can see that. Okay.
I have some customers that I think are a lot sharper than me, and I try to do what they're doing. You know, if they're drawing back on inventory, I need to be looking at my inventory. And if they're loading up, I need to ask them, hey, why are you loading up? There's a guy over in Audubon, Iowa named Lou Herbers. If you want to do the right thing, do what Lou does. That guy, if he's buying potash, you need to be buying potash. If he's loading up on glyphosate, you should have your shed clear full. That he just, some people, you know, timing is everything, and some people just are good at it, better than others.
How do you guys hedge some of that risk on your inventory? Just hope it works out, or what are you doing there?
Yeah. But we got a good wholesale team that also gives us feedback. You know, as our business has grown, you know, we got the core. I talked about that earlier, the great core team that we have, but every person that works here has input and it's valuable, and we listen to all of it, and we can kind of get our ear to the ground by listening to the people that are working here, talking to the customers and out in the field.
That makes sense.
Jordan, what's the chemicals, the wholesale chemical side of the business? Is that something totally different? Like, is that like a totally separate business model you guys are doing?
Yeah, we're taking care of other retailers' needs. So there are two major buying groups of crop protection chemicals in the United States. The largest one is a company called Tencos, and the second largest one is a company called IAP. And we are a member of the IAP buying group. So I'm currently serving as the chairman of the board of that group. And it is a group of companies that buy together so that we are able to help companies like Quality Ag Service, companies like, you know, mom and pop retailers and local cooperatives. We are able to help them compete because our buying group is the fifth largest chemical buying company in the United States. Together, none of us would even be in the top 100, but all 38 of us together, we would be the fifth largest chemical buy in the U.S. So we get companies like, you know, the big ones, BASF, and companies like that will give us some attention. But really where we are better at buying is with the post-patent. And most chemicals are post-patent. Now, there's very few of them that are patent protected. There has not been a lot of innovation in crop protection chemicals in the last 20 years. So, you know, I'll give you an example. Mesotrione was a Syngenta invention, patent protected. It was $400 a gallon, and we're retailing now for less than 70. So that's how things are going. And people will use more of the generic as they become more available. Zidua, everybody knows about Zidua, great group 15 herbicide. It's going to go generic in 2026. And the price will go from $400 down to $70 within a couple of years. Yeah. But that wholesale segment it's where I spend most of my time when it's not busy at retail. Like today I'm going to jump in a tender truck when we get off of our call and try to help our retail team here in Albia. But everybody here works. We get up and go to work every day. That's probably, I'd say, the hallmark of all of our successes. Everybody goes to work every day.
That's rare. But how'd that buying group start? Did you start that? Did you help start that up? Or
no, that buying group, it's based out of Fresno, California. It's called IAP, Integrated Ag Professionals. And it was a group of California retailers that didn't think that they were getting the best buy. So they formed IAP. And as time progressed, it's become a national concern. In Iowa, there's Quality Ag Service and Landis are owners of IAP. We call ourselves owners. And it's a all for one, one for all. We make our best deals and we're able to sometimes buy better than the giants like Nutrien and Helena they're not really the enemy of the farmer, but they are the patron of their shareholders. They care more about their shareholders more than they do their customers. And that's just the way large corporations are built. Our deal, we just want to help everybody make money and compete against them. And I got nothing against some of the greatest, best people in the world work at those large corporations, but they're more concerned about their shareholders than anything. So, and that's the way corporate world's set up.
Yeah, I hear that one, Joe. So interesting. Jordan, what do you think?
Yeah, so how did, tell me this, your dad was running around doing all this crazy stuff. I was talking to Hugh before the podcast started and asking if you guys own Sinclair Tractor too up there. And it sounded like that was your dad's. When you first got started, it sounded like things weren't really going your way. how did you continue to keep doing it on your own and not join up with your dad? Like, what was your driving motive to just keep doing Quality Ag Service on your own?
Well, I have a team that I'm responsible to here, and we couldn't fail. We had to work our way through it. And Chris was there for every mistake that was made. And some of them we got ambushed, and some of them we should have seen it coming. But we just, if we made a mistake, we worked our way through it. And we had really good bankers at the beginning that stuck with us. There was one bank, they had an election about 15 years after it happened. You know, I knew we were going to lose money in 1999, and our loan renewed in January. So I went to the bank in June, said, this is how much didn't get planted. This is how much we're going to lose. And I'm not going to be able to pay you back when the line of credit renews in January. So I need to know if you're in or you're out. Cause if you're out, I got to figure something. And they asked for some more documentation and said, you're sure it's that bad? And I said, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's that bad. And years later, this assistant loan officer was on the loan committee. He goes, hey, you guys are doing pretty good now, aren't you? I said, well, we're trying. And he goes, I remember when you guys weren't doing so good. He goes, we had an election at the bank. I was on the loan committee. He said, the president of the bank said, the worst hit we ever took was with a grain elevator, and I'm not going to lose it again on a grain elevator. And our lender, he said, no, it's not a grain elevator. They're an agronomy company. They'll be all right. And he said that he had the last vote, and he hated to go against his boss. But he said, boss, he goes, usually we find out about these kind of deals 6 months after they happen instead of 6 months before. So when the loan renews in January, I'm going to vote to fund it. And if they don't show improvement in 2000, I'll change my vote. And Chris was integral in navigating us through all that. And we had a good year in 2000. It was a bounce back year. So
he was in the early times, he was very adamant that he was not going to ride on his dad's coattails. Most of the time people say something about Mo Sinclair and he wouldn't even acknowledge that, that this was his, he's got the Irish stubbornness. Joe was going to do it on his own. It's going to be his prize, not ride on somebody's coattails. But I think that was part of what drove him to do it too. Wanted to be his own. Would you agree?
Yeah, that would be accurate. And I did get help from dad one time, more than one time, but one time with the grain elevator license, you got to have cash in the bank. And we needed some cash in the bank. And I asked dad, hey, would you prepay your chemicals and seed for next year? Even though you don't need to, I could use 50 grand this month. And dad did do that. So that dad has helped us for sure. And not just financially, but the example and the commitment to hard work that he showed us. It's been a big part of how we built this business.
Yeah.
His dad still comes in and pays his own bills, and he'll come in and pay his bill, and we'll have a little visit, and he'll kind of laugh when he's writing out the check. He said, yeah, this Joe's just taking his inheritance a little early. So
exactly.
That's kind of his running joke.
That's funny. So how many brothers and sisters you have, Joe?
I've got four brothers and sisters, two brothers, two sisters. I got a brother that's not quite a year older, Jimmy. My sister Lisa, she and I are both 58 years old today, and we will be until the end of next month. She's 10 months younger than me. And then Bobby, that runs the John Deere store, he was born in 69, and the baby Linda was born in 73. And both the girls and their families work in the restaurants business. Bobby runs the John Deere store. My brother Jimmy is a lawyer up in Des Moines and manages property, both farms and commercial real estate.
Good. So yeah, you guys have all done well.
So far, yeah. So good.
So far, right on. I hear you.
But sure. Talk about deals that didn't go so good. I had an idea. We had a new resort got built here in Southern Iowa. It's called Honey Creek Resort on Lake Rathbun. And I got involved in that and got involved with the management company. And we got a concession to rent the boats out at the resort. And build a whole business around it. We call it Quality Power Sports. We sold boats, ATVs.
Oh, wow.
Had service, sales, rentals. And what I can tell you about that deal is if it had been the first deal that we ever did, there wouldn't have been a second one. It was that bad.
Really?
And anyway, learned a lot about a different business and understood after it was over that focus on what you really love and you're going to be better. So I'm done doing anything I'm done focusing on anything that doesn't have anything to do with agriculture. I'm not a boat guy. You know, how many boats did we own at the max, Chris? 45 or 50 of them?
Yeah.
Too many.
We all see that happen all the time. Yeah, I've always coming up with some harebrained crazy ideas. Used to. I've slowed that down a lot. I'm like you, Joe. I'm like, need to keep knitting the sweater I'm knitting, you know, knit the one that has been making us money and that we're good at and that we know what we're doing. So it always sounds like a good idea when you say it real fast, right? Until you get into it.
Well, it's okay to be investing in some stuff that you're interested in, but to actually launch your whole entire workday into it, it's hard to have two jobs at the same time. You're better off just doing one and trying to do the best you can with that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I've made those mistakes many times. Yeah. Come home, told the wife something, you know. I came home one time, told her, hey, I think I bought that restaurant up in town and the bar next to it. And she's like, what do you mean you think? And I said, well, I wrote him a check. And she's like, what the hell are we going to do with that? Shit, I was up there playing cards one night and got a little crazy. I said, well, I think you're going to go up there and run that restaurant and that bar. Damn, the kids were like, 7, 8 years old, you know, she's like, holy shit. So yeah, that was a real experience.
Yeah.
Good.
But you're like me, Kevin. It's a blessing that you have Jordan with you. I mean, you got your son on this Zoom with you and I got my son with me. And it's a blessing to have family, an even greater blessing to be able to work with family. It's fantastic.
Yeah. How many kids you have, Joe?
We've got three. The oldest one is a girl, Mary Pat. She's pregnant with their third, and they live in Arkansas. But her and her husband are moving back to Iowa with our grandkids. And then the middle one, Hugh's older brother, Hugh's the youngest, Wilson, he works for the USDA. He's a research economist for the USDA and does projects on food expense.
Yeah.
That's his area of expertise.
And Hugh, you came back. Tell us your story.
I came back. Well, obviously, I grew up with this business. I was born in 96, and so basically it's all I really know. And thought I was going to be an engineer. Went to a school called Rose Holman in Terre Haute, Indiana, for 2 years. And it's an all-engineering school. If you're not going to be an engineer from there, you're either going to be a mathematician or a physics and optics major, and realized that's not what I want to do. So I left there, worked for about 5-6 months at the dealership in Ottumwa, the Sinclair Tractor there, and then realized I should go back to school and finish up there. So I ended up in Wichita State doing general business, finished up there and came back, and dad put me to work. So
there you go, for sure.
When did you start working when you were little?
I mean, I think I left a mess more than I did anything, but we had sweeping compound in the old office that in Albia, and I just threw it all out and I would start sweeping. And I think Chris is probably tired of me because I would only sweep about half of it and then get tired and go home. But I was probably about six or seven. Yeah, start the job, but never really finished it. But
and you're running the retail up north, right?
So I work underneath Troy. Troy's our general manager up here, and I run the sprayer and the interrogator that we have up here. Do a little bit of sales, talk to some people, and did a little bit of spraying this morning, and took a little break, and came talk to you guys.
Yeah, nice. For sure.
What side of the business do you like the best? The agronomy side or the crop insurance? Or
I've only been in the agronomy side, only in operation so far. Started out and was just chucking boxes on trucks, and then got my CDL, and so I started driving the trucks, and then got my applicator license, and now I get to run the sprayer. So I've been working up, but still not to those other parts yet. But my wife, she graduated from Iowa State last year, which she's somewhere on here. But she's in administration with Chris, works under Chris. And so she has been doing a lot of logistics, a lot of billing and all that. So
you guys will do it all. You're not afraid to load some trucks?
No. Absolutely not.
Nobody around here can be too proud to push a broom. And that's from me. I mean, I'll clean the toilet.
I have cleaned the toilets plenty at my offices, and I'm always come out yelling like, if I got to be the guy to clean the toilet one more time, I'm done here. But it happens. I mean, I was reading the whole success story of Nordstrom's, and that guy just passed away, where brought that up from nothing, from a shoe store, and created Nordstrom. But I was telling Jordan, he reverse flowed all his upper management. Like, the upper management and executives had to be willing to go unload boxes if a truck got, showed up, middle of the night, or something happened and the managers couldn't be there, down to the sales. I mean, they had to be willing to do every single thing. And, I thought that was, that's how it should be. And it's tough to find, though, today's world. I mean, like, Jordan will try and hire people, and I will as well with helping. But, people want to come in and just want a title, or, they just want that, kind of, hey, it's beneath me to do that type of work if something were to come up. That just nothing pisses me off more, but I don't know.
I can't disagree with that. And we try to attract the best people, and our core is really what gets us the best help. I mean, you look at a guy like runs our store at Melrose, our operations manager, Kevin Griffin, the guy that runs the warehouse here, Joe Knowles. People want to work for guys like them. Chris gets good people coming into the office because people want to work for somebody that's really good. And that's what we have. The core is unbelievable. I mean, they're the first ones there. They're the last ones to leave. They help all the way through. And what I've seen with the managers that we've had that weren't as good, don't want to say that they failed, but the ones that weren't as good, they weren't trying to help their team. They were trying to be the boss of their team. And you got to want to help your team. You got to want your team to have it easier because you were there. So that's what I try to do with the team I'm working with, try to make it easier for them to do their job.
And don't you think, Joe, owning a bunch of different businesses like myself, I mean, it all ultimately comes out, if you look back, it's like someone should have told us really early. I mean, the key is, can you build a good team? Like, I don't care, you know, just like building a baseball team or football. I mean, you got to do the same thing in business.
Yeah.
That's the whole key. Will people play for you? Can you keep them happy? Can you build the team?
You could have the best stadium and the best coach, but if you don't have good players, you're not going to win very many games.
No, I agree with you. I totally agree. That, Jordan, you're finding that's tough right now. I'm sure, Hugh, you'll be fine.
Yeah, once you get to a certain level, that's the name of the game.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say that we have done, and it's been in conjunction with John Deere and Sinclair Tractor, is we've been early adopters of technology. And anytime that we see something that's better, we try to do it. We were the first ones that had auto steer. And the guys running the sprayers, we're like, oh, I don't want to use that thing. I want to drop foam. And I was like, no, we paid $60,000 for that auto steer. You're going to use the auto steer. And then after 3 days, they were like, how do we ever get along without auto steer? And then when ExactApply came along, are you guys familiar with ExactApply, Jordan?
Not really. No.
No.
So John Deere's got this ExactApply. It utilizes RTK, which stands for real-time kinetics with GPS. And we go out and we map the fields. And in Southern Iowa, the fields are not square, and there's lots of interior boundaries, either waterways or terraces. And we map that field so that the interior boundaries are marked and the exterior boundaries marked, and the sprayer pulls in the field. Every nozzle is its own boom section. So every 20 inches, a spray nozzle turns on and turns off whenever it's supposed to or not supposed to. And we adopted that technology. And when it first came on, there were glitches, and this staff's like, this monitor isn't working right. And I was like, okay, go park and get your lunch until we get it fixed, because this is the same thing as having a flat tire. You're broke down until we get this fixed. And after a couple of weeks of that, nobody wants to spray a field that hasn't been mapped. And it is really cool technology. When the sprayers are turning, making an arc with RTK, the sprayer knows it, and it will make the outside tips put on faster and the inside tips put on slower, so that's an even application even during turns. And it recognizes hills, it recognizes contour. It's just unbelievable technology, and we have every one of our fields that we spray mapped out for that. And we can pull into a field with a brand new applicator, guy that's never been in one before, that knows how to run that computer on that sprayer, and he'll do a better job than another company that's got a guy that's been doing it for 20 years pull in without it. It's just, it doesn't let you make a mistake. It's so awesome.
Yeah. And that helps all the way across the board, right? I mean, with better application, using less everything, right?
Yeah. You pull in the field. If it says there's 72.4 acres, you're going to spray 72.4 acres. You're not going to spray 73 and a half. You're going to spray down to the 10th of an acre. It's great for like when you're finishing up a day, you send the truck out there and you know you got exactly what you need. And back in the old day, you'd carry extra water and extra chemicals. So if you ran out, you'd dump a little bit extra in, and then you get to the end of the field and you'd have too much. You're like, well, what am I going to do with the last 80 gallons in here? Because I'm going to go spray something different. So you've been putting on a 15 gallon, you go back across what you already did at 3 gallon just to get rid of it. So it's a lot better technology. And Chris, the technology in the office, we're not doing as good at that as we are in the field, but you got a lot of better tools for technology in the office too.
Yeah. We try to stay, our accounting software is all cloud based. So just decreases a lot of chances of any cyber so-called terrorism or whatever being hacked, or, and it's just less downtime because it's a company-wide server that we can I can log in from anywhere. I can be in my kitchen at home or here, or anyone can log in from anywhere. And so we try to stay up to date with that. And we're in the middle of trying to implement the field planning for the custom application jobs. So you can make the ticket in the office and send it to the sprayer. And so they know instantly what the job is and everything, but there's always new technology to adopt. We try to stay on top of it as much as we can.
So tell me this, Joe, what do you think the biggest single factor is for your customers? Why do they choose quality service over going with somebody else?
It's relationships. It's their relationship with whoever it is that they're talking to at Quality Ag. That's why. We're not doing anything differently than we try to be better, and we are with ExactApply. And that is a reason why people would come to us. But if Nutrien had a crack salesman, he could talk a customer out of our ExactApply if he had a good enough relationship with them. And if you don't have a relationship with somebody you trust to help you to grow that crop and help you to make money, our whole focus at the grower level is we want our customers to make more money. That's our focus. At the wholesale, we want our customers to save money. But at the grower level, you know, there are times we will recommend a low cost input because it's the highest value. And there are times we'll say, you need to spend some money on fertilizer here and make yourself some money. I think growers are starting to become a little bit more aware of the peril that we have in Midwest. You know, we're at peril if liquid fuels go away, if it goes all electric vehicles. You know, 60% of the corn gets ground into ethanol. I know there's a feed byproduct from that, but if liquid fuels are gone and ethanol's got a poor carbon score, what are you going to do with the ethanol? What are you going to do with the corn? You're not going to need it.
No, we got to find something.
Yeah. So Bruce Rastetter and the Summit group up there, I think that carbon pipeline that just got approved, full disclosure, Chris and I are investors in it, but it got approved for eminent domain in Iowa, and the farmers in Iowa need to get behind, farmers in South Dakota and in North Dakota need to get behind that carbon pipeline, because without it, all this alcohol to jet technology, it'll be just like the one down in Georgia.
You know,
they're not taking U.S. ethanol and turning it into jet fuel at the new plant in Georgia. They're shipping the ethanol up from Brazil. Sugarcane ethanol, because it's got a better carbon score.
Yeah, I hear the same thing from all of the ethanol plants that we're investing in, or the ethanol city. Everyone's saying the same thing. So we got to get behind this pipeline. And I got it. Hell, no one wants it ran through their backyard or their farm. But shit, I mean, if without it, we're in trouble. Like you said, I think we got issues.
You're going to get paid to have your farm right away about what the acre's worth. And it's going to make your farm worth more, because if there's no corn being grown on it, because we don't need corn, your farm's worth less. So if you got the pipeline going through there, you win twice. You get paid for the right of way, and your farm's worth more because corn's worth more. No brainer to me.
What happened early on, all the controversy? It just got delivered the wrong message, or what? I think
it was misinformation.
Yeah.
I think everybody that was involved in the project just knew how great of a deal it was, and that corn farming in the Midwest was sunk if we don't do this. And you just had some absentee landowners that were swayed by the Sierra Club. Whenever you get a farm group aligned with the Sierra Club, that's like Hamas and the IDF going out for cocktails. And you got to scratch your head and say, why would these two groups be together?
But, yeah. I hear you. Shit. I don't know, but no, I'm with you. Yeah. Something's got to happen there. I think the pipeline has to be the key several. So I guess we'll see as that plays forward, but yeah, I'm just saying on the technology front, it is hard to break in to the ag space. And, you know, a lot of people come in with big ideas, and we see them come in from Silicon Valley and everywhere else, and they think they're going to create this new technology. And where they all fall flat, Joe, is, like you said, the relationship, meeting face-to-face with the farmer and understanding, you know, our rural lifestyle, and just understanding more about us. And, you know, that's really hurt them. So, yeah.
And I hope I'm not boring people with this dialogue, Kevin, but the other thing that I really want to make sure that I brought up is part of what I try to do in life, in business and everything, is when you hang out with great people, you're going to meet more great people. And one of my greatest pleasures in life is to introduce great people to one another. The Van Trumps are in that group, but I just think back, you know, some of the greatest people that I know and how I got to be introduced to them. You know, you owe that person a favor. And in business, it's the same thing. You get a great customer and you're going to find another great customer. Right. And then they become friends. You know, like one of my fastest friends in the world is Pat Hammes. And through him, I meet another one of my fastest friends in the world, Ben Rinchie. And he's just, I think in coaching, they call it the coaching tree. When you got a head coach that has all these other coaches underneath.
Oh, yeah.
And I call it the friend tree or the customer tree. You hang out with good people, you're going to meet more good people.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, and I'm hoping that we get more younger kids to come, Hugh's age, Jordan's age, to FarmCon. And I've seen a lot of younger kids, you know, they don't network as much as we did, as, you know, it seems like our family taught us that we need to get out there, network, like you're saying, and meet new people, and good things come from all that networking and shit. It's just, you know, kids do it differently now, but I think that really needs to be a big focus for building up your businesses, like we're saying. So,
Hugh, what was your favorite thing about your first FarmCon?
Oh, it was a lot. There was a lot of information, but I'd say the camaraderie that we had at the table and had the group of guys that were there all the days, and it was, I don't know, it's a bunch of fun is what it was, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I think the thing we're proudest of the whole thing, you know, Joe, that just started with a few of my friends that were traders and investors, and then we we all owned some land, and we owned like the hunt and fish and that and that, and then we started inviting more people. So it's really a room of doers, you know, I mean, we're not just kind of, everybody there's kind of owns a lot of different businesses, owns lots of different things. So yeah. And not just a bunch of folks going to a seminar. So yeah, there's a lot of good people in the room, and hopefully we can continue to grow that.
Yeah. I guess let's end with some like input fertilizer outlook. I know we're coming up on people starting to offer cheaper pricing for locking in prices. What do you think people should be doing in the fall, Joe? What should we be doing with our input? Should we be locking some stuff in or wait until the spring? Or
that's a great question. And Jordan, I tell people when they're buying fertilizer and selling grain, it's not near as important who you buy from or sell to as when you buy and sell. Timing is way more important than the vendor or customer. So you got to trust the people that you're dealing with. Right now, there is a disconnect between the commodity price. Corn is just getting beat up. And there's a disconnect between the commodity price, which is the crop, and the input price, which is the fertilizer. Coke's trying to buy the multi-billion dollar nitrogen plant in Iowa, in Southeast Iowa, that was granted hundreds of millions of dollars of tax abatements. And the governor at the time is the governor we have now, that said this would never have been approved if it would have been Coke or CF, because we need competition so our Iowa farmers can get a better deal. And Coke's in there trying to buy it now. And I don't know if the SEC is going to let them or not, but so we're getting, in nitrogen especially, it's getting to be a really tight group that is producing in the U.S. We've got the world's cheapest gas, so it's a big industry. They had their fill offer out for about half a day this week, and everybody threw up all over it. Some people had to buy because they got to have it trucked in. They can't use the ports. So I'm going to say that nitrogen, it's probably a okay deal to buy it the first time somebody comes to you this fall and says, this is my nitrogen price. You're probably going to be okay on that, because these producers are are they're getting more than they should, but I don't think that they're going to take any less. On the other macronutrients, phosphorus and potassium, Nutrien's got a monopoly on North American potash production, and the other major potash producing area of the world is Russia. So we're just going to have to pay whatever Nutrien is going to make us pay for it. And Canada loves monopolies. They love monopolies in their rail. They love monopolies in their manufacturing. They love monopolies in their mining. Right now, Nutrien's enjoying that monopoly. Phosphorus, we got some Moroccan product that can come in. The tariffs are largely gone. That was part of the food inflation price spike of the pre-pandemic era. So I think phosphorus is got a little pressure on it. I think it could go down. It hasn't really reset to where it should. So on the macronutrients, I think there's pretty much equilibrium, with the exception that nitrogen is going to cost too much compared to the price of a bushel of corn. On your crop protection chemicals, everything is going off patent that hasn't been off patent. And you're just going to need to make a plan with your supplier. If you're a grower, make a plan with your supplier and lock in what you want in December, like you always have, and you'll get the best deal. Yeah. It's definitely a buyer's market in crop protection chemicals for sure.
Cool. You have any other questions to add or?
No, you guys, anybody else have anything you want to add or anything we didn't talk about or ideas, thoughts?
I think I'm okay.
Worries.
I think we're good. Yeah. We're about 60 minutes in. So yeah, I got a lot out of it. So.
Well, yeah. I don't know how you guys are going to, if you're going to chop it or edit it or what, but I apologize for any stutters, and I think I kept it clean with profanity. So I don't usually have too much trouble with that, but every once in a while I'll get excited and let one slip.
I hear you, buddy. So yeah. Appreciate everybody.
Yeah. Sure. You guys are great. Love family companies like the Van Trumps, Mershman's. We're a family company here, and it's good to hang with our family farmer customers and guys like you, Van Trumps. Thank you.
I agree. Thank you guys. I appreciate it. So.
Yeah, appreciate you guys taking the time and let us know if we can do anything to help you guys out. So
thanks.
Thanks, Joe. To you. See you guys. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for jumping on.
Have a good one. Thank you.
Yep. See you guys.
Bye.